From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about the Backyard Advantage, right? The most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs based around this culture of love. And at the heart of the backyard, at the heart of Sacramento's entrepreneur scene, business scene in general, is an organization called GSEC, Greater Sacramento Economic Council. And today on the show, we're lucky to have Trolls Adrian. He is executive VP. He runs, I think you run everything over there. I know you have teammates and stuff, but basically you are the visionary. You are the guy that gets things done on a day-to-day basis. And so welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, 100%. So we were just talking a little bit. So your economic development, we were just talking about, you know, the places that you have been involved in economic development, from Atlanta to Portland and now Sacramento. And you, maybe give us a little bit of, like, what is it specifically that an organization like GSEC does, and how might that be different than what you've seen in other municipalities?
Sure. So the Greater Sacramento Economic Council, we're a public-private partnership, and I think that's really, really important. And all those three words mean something in that we have a partnership that we're a nonprofit, right? We have a partnership that is comprised of all the sectors that involve or that drive economic change and economic opportunity in a community. And we have those folks at the table at the highest level. Right. So we have 22 investor communities. We have, our local governments, our counties, our cities, et cetera. We have our universities. We have big institutions, you know, healthcare institutions, and we have private sector CEOs all sitting around the same table on our board of directors, really setting an agenda and, you know, working and rowing in the same direction to drive the economic prosperity for the region. And it's a fairly common model across the United States. It's something, you know, Barry, you call me the visionary. It's very kind. I will give full faith and credit to Barry Broom, our CEO here. He's definitely the visionary, the founder of GSEC, right? And Barry, of course, before he came here, ran the Greater Phoenix Economic Council, which is a similarly set up organization. I think what makes GSEC really uncommon, if not unique, in the U.S. is the sort of the level of within these institutions and organizations that we have involved, right? We set a really, really high standard. We have the CEOs at the table. Right now, our board chair, of course, is Chancellor May from UC Davis. And so what that means is that we have involvement at the very highest levels. What you see in some other markets, not all, there are some great organizations out there that do similar stuff, but what you see in many other markets is you may not have the top, you know, tier executive in the market at the table at these public-private partnerships, and that changes the tenor of the conversation a little bit. I think that is a pretty big part of our special sauce, is that we have a really high-powered board that's also extremely supportive of the work that we do, that really spans widely across all the sectors and geographies that we have within the region.
You know, when you started GSEC, and I have to imagine part of the driving force was to drive unity and togetherness. When Barry and other CEOs started GSEC, it was right around the same time that I started our show. I think it was 2015, something like that. And a lot of the work that was done in Sacramento was done more in silos. And today, you've brought some of those silos together, I guess, the different stakeholders of a scale together to help drive this strategy and create a vision. And I've seen that really come together over the last several years. And it's pretty interesting to see what's happened with Sacramento just in these last several years with what you guys have built.
Yeah, and I think that's really key. I mean, from an operational standpoint, right, we do things like business attraction. We go out and work with companies here locally to help them grow, whether they're, of course, their growth factory affiliated or whether they're, you know, existing sort of established companies that are looking to add jobs, et cetera. We market the region, nationally and globally as a place for business, all that kind of stuff that an economic development shop does. But what you're mentioning there, and I think that's really, really important and is often underappreciated, is that because of who we have it at the folks we have at the table, and because of the support that we have, we're able to generate a level of alignment that is absolutely crucial to any region that wants to grow and be successful. So when I compare with, I think Atlanta is actually a really good example of a region. So as you mentioned, I spent some time there, about 9 years. Atlanta is a great example of a place that has had a high degree of alignment across geography and across industry and across institutions, et cetera, for a very long period of time. And as a result, today, it is one of the highest performing regions, not just in the country, but in the world economically, right? And they've done a phenomenal job. But it was one of those things I like to call a 30-year overnight success. I mean, you really have to have that alignment, and then you just need to, you know, in a sustained way, chip away at all the challenges and obstacles that stand between you and kind of unleashing your potential as a market, right? And so I think we're in we're very much on the right path in that regard as not just the GSEC, but as the region overall. And it's really, really cool to see, right? I wasn't here for the founding of GSEC, but I know that one of the reasons that GSEC was originally, put together was because the Greater Sacramento market suffered much more so than many peer markets during the Great Recession and its aftermath, and was relatively slow to recover. And I think finding that North Star and getting everybody rowing in the same direction creates that sort of compounding effect of excellence and alignment that you want to see in a market.
All right. Well, I want to talk about how you get there. And it's one of the things that, you know, I work with startups, I work with other businesses to try to help them with their strategy and help them make, you know, the biggest decision I think that we make as business leaders is, what are we going to do with what we got, right? Yep. So what are we going to do with what we got? And that begins with, what do we got, right? So what do we have in Sacramento is the big question. It's not exactly like Portland. It's not like Atlanta in every way. So what are our, you guys ever do like a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats?
Every day.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
we literally do.
That's like an everyday thing.
Because we meet the customer every day,
okay,
right? Because we are out talking to companies every single day, looking at the region. And if you don't know your strengths and weaknesses when you walk into a conversation like that, you'll find out right quick.
All right. And, well, can we go through that a little bit?
Because this,
just for me, like a SWOT analysis is one of the ways to sort of step back and go, what do we got? What do we, you know, and then you can decide how are you going to move these puzzle pieces around? What direction are we going to row?
Sure.
And, you know, what the North Star, you know, is most likely, that it should be. Okay. So what do we have? Let's talk strengths. What are the strengths of Sacramento? If you know, what are you hearing out there? What do you feel and know instinctively?
I mean, I'll just restate it again, like alignment, right? I mean,
okay.
We really do what's really, been, This is a really cool thing when you see it happen in real life, right? Many places, if a company comes in, they go to, and Barry tells the story all the time, right? It's like, hey, they go to one town and that town badmouths all the other towns. Then they go to the next town, that town badmouths.
Right. Yeah. We're talking about like Rockland and Roseville and Elk Grove. Shouldn't they be collaborative?
Exactly. And so we have that now. My understanding is that that hasn't always been the case. And when you see that in markets, it completely turns off all outside investment, right? Because you can pretty much imagine they're going to talk to everybody, and everybody says everybody else is terrible. Mm-hmm. Well, then you're going to walk away with a really negative perception of the market, right? So that alignment really works well.
Yeah, you turned that. I mean, that's just an example of turning an opportunity into a strength, right? So that's and that happened over the last 7 or 8 years.
So you got to get that story right. Right. And what we're working on right now is in February, we're going to launch this new regional brand, the first ever brand for that sort of positions the region as a place to do business that really will be unified. We have a lot of that going on already in the market, but we want to give people more tools to communicate that value proposition, right? So that's a big initiative of ours, and that's something that I think is going to even enhance that strength of ours over the next few years. Another strength that we have is that in many ways, the overall sort of economic picture is shifting in our direction, right? So that's more of an opportunity, if you will, if you were to stay in the SWAT theme.
Well, I mean, so one of the things I look at is like who what do we have here in terms of the unity? Definitely, that's a strength that you built. And but we started with Sac State, we started with UC Davis. We have the colleges,
sure.
we have We have some headquarters of businesses, but not a lot of big businesses. So what is it? We got good weather. You know, there's things about Sacramento that are attractive. Obviously, people have moved here, you know, during the pandemic and so on. So people saw that it's a good place to live. We have the state government is, it's a strength. It's a thing.
It can be, for sure. I would go back to saying, like, so what we're seeing, and I think what has been really, you mentioned that this is something you've definitely seen the last few years post-pandemic. One of the things that we've seen is, you know, Aggie Square mm-hmm. is about to come online, right? That's a major strength of ours. Having, I think UC Davis just continues to build upon strength and, you know, strength upon strength upon strength in terms of its stature as a globally relevant university in multiple industries, not just in the food and ag space, but really as an engineering school, as a medical school, et cetera, right? Sac State continues to improve. They've got some great programs over there, like power electronics, for example, that's really important, or, you know, things that align well with our industry strengths. So on the industry strength side, you know, we've always been very strong on the food and ag tech side, for example, right? Where historically have been an ag community. It's a small industry for us in terms of total number of jobs, but it's definitely one where we have kind of global primacy in terms of technology development. What that is enabling, though, is a ton of opportunity in the bioscience market, for example, biotech and bioscience. We can get all nerdy about it if you want, but basically a lot of the skills and strengths that we have from the historical, you know, winemaking and agriculture and all that good stuff, a lot of those processes and skills are now relevant for pharma mm-hmm. and other biotech companies.
Right? So would you say talent is a strength of Sacramento's at this stage?
It is, particularly okay. engineering. Okay. We have a really, and this goes all the way back to things like when you had Aerojet and the, you know, the military defense industry here, you know, we have a really strong engineering culture. We have a really strong ecosystem in sort of like what you call precision manufacturing, right? You look at companies like Rhombus Systems, for example, mm-hmm. On-Site Technologies. I mean, these are companies that are taking physical products and then they're overlaying them with some kind of software solution or other value-added activity, but they're grounded in a physical product, right? You see the same thing with Bosch, of course, big news out of Bosch and Roseville here on Friday. So we have some really, really interesting opportunities in that regard, because we also remain one of the few markets in California and on the West Coast, indeed, where you can still do manufacturing at a reasonable cost. And so we see a lot of companies that are coming in and saying, wait a minute, this is really, really cool stuff. We can actually have engineers and a lot of high value added activities, but we can also produce stuff. And I think that's where our sweet spot really lies on the industrial side and in a lot of the companies that we're working with.
So why did Bosch come here, and then what's the big news?
Well, so the big news out of Friday is that the Bosch, this is still proposed, but now at this point it's just in due diligence, is that they were awarded a total package of $575 million from the federal government in CHIPS Act resources to build out their fab in Roseville. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge deal for the market. What that means is, well, number one, it means that there's a very high likelihood now that the Bosch project is going to grow and scale to what we thought it was going to be, up to 700 jobs, right? $1.9 billion in investment. One of the largest semiconductor projects in decades in California. But also a crucial component in electric vehicle technology, in anything having to do with battery storage, is these silicon carbide chips that are going to be produced at the Bosch facility in Roseville. That one facility is going to be responsible for about 40% of U.S. manufacturing capacity for that component.
Wow!
So that's an economic developer
stream. Are we becoming a chip hub? I mean, the Growth Factory. It was in the Business Journal, so it's not breaking news. But we just invested into a startup chip company that kind of has a specialty to it. Yep. And we have Intel here. We've got others. Are we becoming kind of a hub for that kind of technology?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
We're not the Silicon Valley, but where do we stack up when it comes to who's noticing us besides, the CHIPS Act and Bosch?
I mean, the good news is they all are. We're not Silicon Valley, but I think in many ways that's a good thing. The because Silicon Valley today is many, in many ways, a lot of headquarters of these big semiconductor companies. A lot of the R&D is no longer based out of there. It's gone to places like Portland or here. So what we have in the greater Sacramento market is we have global relevance in particularly two verticals, and increasingly in a third one, and I'll get to that in a second, but it's in memory, and then it's in these silicon carbide chips, right? So memory chips are, very briefly on semiconductors, there's two kinds of chips, right? You've got the processor chips, which are the ones that, you know, do the thinking, if you will, in a computer. And then you have memory, which are the ones where you take, you know, data in and out of, you know, a piece of DRAM or whatever it is, NAND, flash drive, etc. What we're really, really good at here in the region is memory. So you have a company like Solidigm, which was a spin out from Intel, mm-hmm. right? SK Hynix out of Korea purchased the Intel memory chip division back in 2020. The deal was announced in 2020. They announced the location in this market in early 2022. That was, by the way, by no means a given, right? We mm-hmm. actually had to compete for that. We were able to land them in Rancho. That was a really exciting project. Up to 2,000 jobs, over $1 billion in investment.
How many jobs do they have now? They've already got quite a few jobs.
Yeah, they're over 1,000 now, yeah. right? So they're growing really, really fast. And they, if you notice, they just recently did an entire buyout in Times Square for their new product. So mm-hmm. they're really starting to ramp up. And we're seeing them really, kind of assert themselves as a major corporate player in the market here. With them coming in, and you had Intel here already, that really got the attention of a lot of other companies. So since Solidigm has arrived in the market, you have seen Samsung, you have seen AMD, you have seen Qualcomm, all opening R&D centers along the 50 freeway corridor.
Wow.
And so these are, by and large, relatively small for now, but over time they're going to grow. And we've had Micron here for a while as well, right? So as a result, we now have 9 major semiconductor companies.
Wow. That's almost it's a strength in some way. I mean, it's an emerging strength. It's a huge opportunity.
Yeah, especially within these two verticals. In the mm-hmm. third vertical, you mentioned, I believe it's Azimuth you're talking mm-hmm. about, the company you all just invested in. We have a third emerging vertical here, which is really around edge computing, particularly in AI, right? So basically, you know, chips that can operate on relatively low power, that can do a lot of heavy lifting on the compute side in devices, right? Instead of having to go back to a data center and haul a bunch of data out of there and do a bunch of processing and put it back, and it becomes very power hungry and difficult to do. If you're sitting out in if you're running an operation out in the field, for example, if you're a farmer or you're in the military or whatever, you don't necessarily have the ability to just go hook up to a data center and do a bunch of heavy lifting, right? So having these chips that can do a lot of that stuff on the device is helpful. That's what Blaze can do, by the way, out of out of El Dorado Hills as well. And a lot of that actually came out of Intel, right? Which is still here. Company is obviously going through some tough times right now, but they still remain our largest semiconductor employer. Although what has been really helpful to see over the years, as I sort of alluded to, is we've seen this tremendous amount of diversification, right? So now, because you're talking about strength here, one of the challenges you're always going to worry about, and that's the state government as well, is some strengths can become so strong they're weaknesses. You can become over-reliant on a single industry or a single employer. And I think there was a risk of that happening with us in semiconductors, but I think with Solidigm and Bosch coming in now, we have a very, very healthy ecosystem that is a much broader base, and where you're going to see, there's just a lot of leverage there, right? Because we're not relying on a single company doing all the lifting for us, or for that matter, on the state government side. One of the reasons we exist at GSAC is we want to diversify our regional economy away from government, while still leveraging some of the strengths that come with having a strong government presence here in the market.
All right, let's talk about government, because people have said to me, yeah, we're a company town, and our company is the government. And which is interesting, because we have, there's a major employer in town. Obviously, during COVID, things have shifted. People are working from home more now. So what's that do for office building and office space? And how does that change your job or the strategy? I sort of wonder that. I love that we're diversifying away from an over-reliance on, government. But it's also a strength in that it's a steady job, right? So far, it's steady. It shows up every day.
It is. And you have to be very, there is a high degree of risk in that. Because if you look at the fundamentals of the California economy right now, right? The state of California, up until, I mean, honestly, right before COVID and around the Great Recession, was a nonstop growth engine, right? And not just in terms of economic growth, but also population growth, right? In recent years, you've seen state population growth taper off. It even went negative a little bit. Here's the deal. State government is directly, the size of the state government is directly related to the size of the state population, right? So when the state population goes into decline, or at least, or it sort of tapers off a little bit and starts going stagnant, state government is not going to grow, right? And that's irrespective of what people may, you know, have opinions politically about what we should and shouldn't do around government. But from a straight economics perspective, that means that we do not foresee a significant growth in state government employment in the region in the near future. You mentioned a couple of the factors there. People are working more remotely. That means people can disperse more. There might be folks who are working out of, say, Fresno, Modesto, Bakersfield, but they are technically officed out of Sacramento. That means that their dollars are actually spent down there, not here in the market. There's the fact that the state at the moment is operating on a structural deficit. We've got some challenges and challenging budgets coming up, right? So we actually, you're right that there is a steady job for a lot of folks here in the market, but if we want to create economic dynamism for the region, we do need to shift away from that over-reliance on that single employer, even though it does provide a decent base. But I will also say that decent base didn't do the region that much good back in the during the Great Recession, right, where we were legitimately in very, very rough shape, economically speaking. So we are over-reliant on state government at the moment, but I do think, you know, at the end of the day, we're still going to be the state capital of California. And there are some tremendous strengths that come with that as well, right? Our entire value proposition, for example, around clean tech and green energy and zero emission vehicles, a lot of that relies on things like having the California Energy Commission in town, the California Air Resources Board, you know, all of these regulatory bodies that drive decision making in the automotive sector and the energy sector, which means that we have a lot of really, really brilliant people here in the market who understand those kinds of things really, really well. You also have things like GovTech, which I know is something you all are interested in, the growth factory. You have a company like HCL, for example, that located on Capitol Mall. We were involved in that project. They put about 600 people.
GovTech companies want to be around government, right? Washington, D.C., yeah. State of California.
Exactly. That's it, right? And so the closer they are to government, the better for them, right? So there are some opportunities there as well, for sure. They mostly are on the private sector side of the ledger, though.
What about, okay, so you think about politics, and this show is definitely not about politics. There's people, you know, on both sides of the aisle all over Sacramento. But is it true that people are leaving Sacramento at some level, not Sacramento, leaving California at some level to go where there's less regulation and lower taxes and things like that, but yet Sacramento is growing at some level, even though people are leaving California overall, Sacramento is still seeing growth. Is that a fair statement?
That is a factually accurate statement. Okay. Because if you look at between January 2023 and now, our region has had the seventh highest job growth in the country of all major markets, faster than any other market in California, right?
And so, we're going against a headwind, correct, of people leaving the state, because they're leaving L.A. and San Francisco and other places in California to go where life is different.
And in many cases, they're moving here, right? So in this region, we're the number three destination for Bay Area tech worker migration in the country. We're the number one destination for people leaving the Bay Area, period, in the United States. But for technology workers, for the, you know, that sort of tech workforce, we're number three in the country, right? And so I think increasingly what we're seeing is that people are, you know, they're taking a look at Sacramento and the greater Sacramento market, and they're seeing they're liking what they see, and they're voting with their feet if they're people, and they're voting with their wallets if they're businesses, because otherwise we wouldn't have the job growth that we have, and we wouldn't have the population growth that we have.
Yeah. Another strength that I think people saw during the pandemic, and I wonder if it still exists in people's minds, is the affordability of a house. So our houses were, and real estate in general, was cheaper here than in some of these bigger cities. It's gone up in value, and so it's not as affordable, generally speaking, at least a home here. Do you feel like it's still a strength comparatively?
it's still comparatively a strength, but it's something we have to continue working on.
Yeah.
You know, and I will say, you know, to the great credit of the leaders of this region, we are actually doing our part to the extent that we can. I mean, we're permitting about 12% of the state's housing, and we're only 6% of the state population. So we're punching above our weight.
How does that work? What do you mean, how does that work, where you're permitting more houses than are in our region?
No. What it means is basically if you take the total number of houses that are permitted in the state of California in a year, we're doing about 12% of those permits.
Gotcha.
But we're only 6% of the population of the state. So we're doing much, much higher than other regions around the state. But we are, of course, still seeing significant pressures. But I do think it has slowed down housing growth escalation quite a bit here in the market, that we're seeing a lot of leadership in housing, including here in Placer County, of course.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just built a house in Placer, a couple houses in Placer County, and I was disappointed by the amount of regulation and hoops that I have to, you know, jump through. And, you know, you think about that, is that an area that some, and no criticism against Placer County, I don't know that it's, you mentioned that they're maybe they're better than some, but what are we doing? Is that part of your department where you sort of help minimize some of the regulations and stuff? So, because some of these regulations are not, they're state and federal, but a lot of them are self-imposed.
100%. Yeah. And so you will note that I said, you know, even though we do 12% of the state's permits, we should probably be doing double that if we really want to keep up with demand, right? So there's one of the initiatives that we're working with a lot of our local governments right now is called Market Velocity. And what that really is about is exactly what you're talking about there. When we look at companies that are coming into the market, right, we win a fair number of them, but we don't win everyone, of course. We do a lot of analysis. Okay, why did we lose this deal, for example? Many times it's because we're not always quite as fast as we would like the market to be, right? Or the market would like us to be.
Okay.
Right? So what we really, again, that's why we call it market velocity. We're trying to meet the speed of the market at all times. And a lot of that has to do with sometimes, you know, well-meaning, if you will, regulations or rules that have been set up, for example, that can inadvertently hinder a company, making an investment or making a decision as quickly as they should, right? I mean, this extra bit of review that may have made sense when you created.
Does that have to do with the real estate and where they're going to locate? Is that what the regulation is?
It can sometimes be on the real estate side. It can sometimes be on the environmental side. Mm. But it's sometimes like, hey, how quickly can we get can we get certainty for a company, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes it's not even the red tape. It's just like, can you say yes or no with certainty on something? Or can you deliver this type of turnkey partnership on the workforce side, for example? Well, no, we have to build it first. Well, okay, that means if you have to build it first and they have a turnkey in another part of the country, then they're probably going to, you know, they're going to go there. So one of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out what is the market demanding at any given time, making sure that there are turnkey solutions at the local level to whatever a company may need in that particular industry, right? Again, a good example of that is what we've been, Sierra College has been doing an incredible work with a job with Bosch, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things we did, we went to Germany back in February. We made sure that Sierra College was part of that delegation. Willie Duncan was kind enough to join us. And we had discussions with Bosch there in Germany about what they needed when they started scaling up.
A lot of that was from a talent perspective, yeah. I assume. People coming out of Sierra College would be good job applicants.
Well, and then President Duncan went back and talked to his team and said, hey, this is what we're going to need to start building up so that they're ready to run. And they were ready to run when Bosch came calling and say, hey, we need to start training people.
Yeah, I remember years ago, we had a national security company that's since been sold. We still have some of that stuff. But we were deciding where to locate one of our headquarters. And we decided Texas for a variety of reasons. Part of it had to do with the people that were on the team. But we could have located anywhere we wanted. And we were incentivized to locate in this certain small town. And because we would drive jobs and so on. And they provided us incentives to locate there because we were going to bring jobs and build a building and some of that kind of stuff. How much flexibility do you guys have on, I know you can, you know, rally partnerships and that kind of thing, but can you get checks written to get people to, like, hey, for every job you create, here's a, here's some money?
Well, absolutely. I mean, okay. When I say we, I obviously mean our partners, right? Mm-hmm. Our government, local government partners. There are several communities in this region that have set up incentive programs over the years. And we just partnered with the city of Rancho Cordova on a program that delivers up to $10,000 per job for jobs paying more than $100,000 a year. And I think that's exactly the kind of aggressive and business-friendly approach that's going to pay dividends for a community over time, right? The compounding effects of excellence. And I think going back to your sort of original question, the reality is that the state of California, it's a highly regulated, high-cost environment. That is, you know, kind of what it is. We obviously are doing, you know, education, et cetera, at the state level to help folks understand where that becomes, you know, overwhelmingly negative for the state. Where our opportunity lies is always to be, we need to be the most business friendly and the most aggressive and the most forward thinking region in the state of California on economic development. That will, at the end of the day, be a winning proposition for companies. And I think, I mean, what Rancho is doing, for example, is a perfect example of that. Right?
Yeah.
They were also, I mean, to your point around permitting, I mean, they were able to turn around all the permits for Solidigm in less than 3 months.
Wow.
You know, there are governments in the region that are able to do this really, really well. And so the more we can lift that that tide for everyone, the better we're going to do.
Well, those examples, so that's interesting because if I wonder if this is sort of part of the collaborative process or is it competitive? But if, and I know Elk Grove is doing really cool things as well. They've got a forward-leaning economic development group. So does Rockland. But each of them has slightly different goals.
Yep.
Maybe they don't want to grow as fast. They want to grow a little bit differently. But is there a way to drive a unifying offer where, hey, come to Sacramento or the region and you can go to any of these towns and you get this?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's, I think, where we'd love to go. Okay. Is that you have basically one turnkey solution that every community, there's like a baseline, for example, incentive package that every community has to offer. And in the meantime, what we really do a lot of, and we have some amazing local economic developers in the state here, you know, we run a group called the Economic Development Directors Task Force. They get together once a quarter, they talk about best practices, et cetera, and then we work to identify because I will tell you, every single one of the 22 communities in this region has a best practice that they can share with someone else. It may not be on incentives. It may, you know, you mentioned Elk Grove. I mean, they're doing some incredible work around the startup.
Yeah, they're funding startups.
Pitch Elk Grove is phenomenal, right? The El Dorado County is doing some cool stuff, mm-hmm, as well on the startup scene, right? You've got, you know, the city of Roseville has some really cool stuff that they're doing on permitting, for example. And you can kind of go on and on. Woodland has the Woodland Research and Technology Park. You know, you do every regional community has something that they're doing better than anybody else. And what our job also as a regional partner for that is to really identify what they are and then make sure that they're widely shared. Because at the end of the day, I mean, is there a little bit of competition in there? Yeah, but it's healthy competition, mm-hmm, right? It's people saying, wait a minute, we can do that too. Yeah, of course we can, right? And that becomes... That turns the flywheel even faster. And that's market velocity. You
yeah.
get the market, you know, running at greater, greater, greater speed all the time, adding new tools in the tool set, making sure that folks are aware of what's out there, make sure people have the information they need to be successful. And then, yeah, maybe one day we'll have like a unified regional incentive program. That would be quite amazing. But in the meantime, and we're working with individual communities to really develop what their tool set looks like.
Okay, so I was at the Kings game last night and with a group of people in the Backyard Advantage, a lot of the people that are helping in the startup community and the venture community, we're there hanging out watching the Kings. And it made me think about the fact that we have the Kings, we saved the Kings. But I'm wondering now the A's are going to be here, from a arts, entertainment, sports, Where do we stack up in terms of, you know, us being sort of a destination for people that want to come here and spend money for that kind of stuff? We've only got the one major franchise, right? The Kings and the A's we're going to have here temporarily, it looks like, hopefully long term.
Well, you know, we got what the A's opportunity gives us is the ability to showcase to the world that we can sustain much more than what we currently have. I mean, we love the Kings. I was at the Kings game tonight, last night as well, by the way. Yes, that was, it was a great game. Too bad it was like just shy of winning. But having the A's here, by the way, you know, we've already sold all the boxes, have sold out for 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the community is stepping up and they're showing that we mean business about this stuff. We're the 20th largest media market in the country.
Okay. Right?
We have the, we have a really, really compelling case for another major league team in the market here. No question about it, right? There was 4 million people in the media market. We do have major corporations. People often, you know, get us with, oh, you don't have any Fortune 500 companies. Well, those are publicly traded companies. But try to think about some of the large private companies we have in the market here. Some of, you know, the big healthcare systems, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. I mean, Sutter Health is a massive company.
Raley's,
massive. VSP. Yeah. These are major, major companies. You know, the Kings is one of the most financially and, in terms of sort of community support, most successful franchises in the NBA. There is no question we can sustain a second one. And in general, the way we're looking at the market right now, and you're seeing that on the business side, you're seeing that on the population growth side, you're seeing that really everywhere, is that we're a market on the ascendant at the mm-hmm. moment. I, you know, generally speaking, sports teams and other big, you know, kind of sort of like brands like that, they want to associate themselves with winners. And this market is a winner. You know, there's no question about that. So over the next 3 years, whether it's the A's or if it's, it's another opportunity, regardless of what the opportunity is, we have a great case and a great value proposition. I know we're going to be making that case globally.
Yeah. So we've got unity, we've got some momentum, we've got these businesses and entities, organizations that are located here, a lot of strengths, weaknesses. What you mentioned, maybe potential over-reliance on one major employer. What other weaknesses do we need to shore up, or do we need to sort of not worry about, but they exist?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily... So this is the old, what's your biggest weakness? I work too hard. Answer, right? As an economic developer, I got to give you that one.
Yeah. You're trying to recruit people here. Why are you going to tell them something bad about Sacramento?
I think
we have homeless. Let's face it. We have a homeless issue.
We do.
But, that changed? Is that improved? Or is it still the same?
The numbers are, right? I think they went down by 40%, right? I mean, so there has been some significant improvement on that. And I think you're seeing that alignment starting to assert itself over across the region on it. No, what I will say is that I think this is sort of the overarching theme is we're sitting at an opportunity rich environment right now. We are at a moment in time. We have a window of opportunity as a region right now. And we need to run through that. And I think that is the lesson is, and I think you talked about the Kings earlier, we retained the Kings. The Golden One Center was built, right? It was one of those things that there was a fair bit of pain and suffering involved in sort of getting that project over the finish line and getting it done. But once it was done, everybody cheered and said, "Why, goodness, this is the greatest thing ever." We're going to really have to lean in over the next few years to seize the advantages and the opportunities that we are given, right? The reality is that you can't always count on the current constellation of economic factors that are in our favor continuing to be in our favor. So we can do a lot on our own. We can always stay aligned. We can always stay, we can always do that kind of work in tandem. But we really do need to stay ambitious, you know, to the point about getting a second major league team, for example. I mean, these are the kind of big wins that we have to shoot for over the next probably 5 to 10 years to really take the region to the next level. And the reality is, because we are an up and coming market, we're going to have to be just a little bit louder, just a little bit better, and just a little bit more aggressive than many of the places that have incumbent advantage, because we don't have incumbent advantage, right? Mm-hmm. We have to move from market share, and that requires an uncommon level of, I think, ambition to get there.
What could derail the momentum? What could derail us? Obviously, a major financial, economic downturn, that would probably be a major pain. If something happened with the state where... You know, they fell on hard times somehow, state of California. If I don't think we have the strongest finances at the moment. So is there anything else that could sort of derail us that you might consider a threat, as long as I'm going through the SWOT analysis?
I mean, honestly, those are short-term things. I mean, yeah. We already had the state, you know, go you know, halfway kaput in the, you know, if they were, for crying out loud, they were issuing IOUs for a while there, right, in the 2000s. We already had a national and international financial crisis, and we did eventually recover from that, albeit too slowly, right? Now we have, I think, put the jets on and are accelerating. At the end of the day, and I really do believe this strongly, when you look at the successful regions, not just in the United States, but across history, across the world, places that stay aligned and stay hungry and stay ambitious are the ones that win out in the long run. So are there things that can derail us in the short run? Sure, they could. When that happens, though, when those kinds of, you know, crises kind of come at us, the challenge and the opportunity lies in staying aligned and staying the course. As long as we do that, you know, the momentum that comes from that compounding effect of excellence will get us right back on track and even stronger than before.
Well, that ambition, many times it comes from, you know, young workers, you know, young people in the workforce. How do we stack up in terms of, you know, how many old people we have as compared to people that are coming into the workforce?
Yeah, we're relatively young for a market in California. I believe the average age in the workforce is just around 30.
Okay.
So that's right around where we should be as a market. We're not one of the youngest markets in the country, but we're not Florida either, right? If you compare to some of the other markets on the West Coast, we have a fairly high degree of dynamism in the workforce as a result of that. We are making a lot of inroads in terms of retaining our graduate talent here in the market, both out of Sac State and out of UC Davis. So I see that as a really big strength of ours.
And is that because you've got growth? Businesses are growing, so they need people. Is that the idea?
Businesses are growing. I also want to say, you know, the overall kind of amenities in the mm-hmm. environment here have improved, you know, enormously over the last few years. The airport is great, right? So it's easy to get in and out of here. We have, we're relatively affordable compared to most other markets on the West Coast. And so, again, we have that kind of like Goldilocks effect. It's like, wait a minute, this is actually a place where I can be a little bit more than just a cog in a wheel. You know what I mean? That's one of the reasons we went with Be More as our slogan for the new regional brand. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we're also seeing a lot from the young folks, and they're very, very pro growth. That's the cool thing. Like younger folks in our workforce really, really want this place to rise to the next level. And so I think we're going to be able to ride their backs on the way to greatness.
It's awesome. I see it. We help startups as young as high school students, and definitely see ambition as one of the strengths of the people that are coming out of the schools that we're working with. There's a lot of ambition. There's a lot of imagination. You know, we're smart. We're tech savvy in many cases. So it's fun to see. So you think about what could derail us, and it's like, well, we've got a nice group of young people emerging that are going to carry us moving forward. So it really is cool. So you mentioned the brand. Tell me about that, because I want to see if I can sort of visualize the picture you're painting. Tell me about this brand.
Sure. So this really came from some analysis that we did around the overall way that we present the region and how do we really take things to the next level, right? So GSAC is about 10 years old. Again, Barry founded us about 10 years ago, actually. I think just around this week, we'll be having a big bash in the spring. So nice. Stay tuned for that.
Yes.
When you look at these regions that have done extraordinarily well over the last, you know, 15, 20 years, one of the things that unify, and so take Austin as an example, right? Austin was able to really ride this notion of keep Austin weird as its unifying brand. And, you know, it was a weird brand, but it worked, right? Yeah. Because they knew that they had a great value proposition from a business standpoint, but then they were able to attract all these tech workers that were like, I don't want to be in a stodgy.
That's an interesting brand slogan, because they do have so many tech workers there, but they've also got arts and entertainment, music, things like that in Austin.
Exactly. And they were able to leverage that to attract a certain kind of worker and a certain kind of company that wanted that amenity set, right? What was really cool about Keep Austin Weird was that it was a regional shared brand. They had, the whole idea here is like, you go get in a cab or an Uber, you go get to the, you know, you talk to a hotel clerk, you talk to your waiter at the restaurant, or you talk to the corporate CEO, and they all talk about the market in the same way. And we really wanted to capture that for the Greater Sacramento marketplace and try to distill that into sort of a set of brand values that we can then go out and collectively communicate into the global marketplace. Because if we can get 2.5 million people singing from that hymnal, we're going to be a lot more effective than if we're, you know, running just one little brand campaign out of GSAC HQ, which we're doing really, really well. You get us in front of a company, we'll convince them all day long, but you can broaden that set.
Get other people talking about it with your mantra.
Exactly.
Keep Austin weird is a very repeatable catchphrase that if people aren't embarrassed, are proud of that, it works.
It worked. And when I was in Atlanta, we worked on a similar thing called Choose ATL, which was a very similar concept, which is basically the brand there was really around, this is the kind of place where you can go and make a mark. And we were really directing that towards younger talent in places like New York and Chicago and other kind of major markets that just felt like everything had already been done there. There was no, like, all the networks were closed, et cetera. That was what we were hearing from a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. We're like, well, we still have open networks. You can come here. You can make a difference. This is the kind of place that's open to change and all that stuff. It was tremendously effective. And they were really effective in also getting that communicated across a lot of industries and a lot of places in Atlanta. So much so, you can actually go find this on YouTube. There was like a John Hamm, you know, Mad Men of Mad Men fame. He was on like one of the nighttime talk shows. And one time he was like, he was like Jimmy Fallon, whatever it was. He was talking about, you know, I just finished a shoot in Atlanta and it was so weird. Everybody I talked to, whether it was the cab driver or, again, he was saying the same thing I just said, they all said the same thing about Atlanta.
Wow.
That's what we're going for here.
Okay.
Right? Where, like, there, no matter what your entry point into the Greater Sacramento market, you get the same brand experience, if you will. You get the same kind of sort of emotional resonance, because that is going to be what takes the market to the next level, along with all the other things that we've been working on, like alignment and, you know, market positioning and incentives and all these other great things like Aggie Square, all that good stuff.
Okay, so what is the brand again? And then paint me that picture of, like, what am I supposed to feel when I hear it, or what am I supposed to see when I imagine it?
So the tagline is Be More, Do Greater Sacramento. Right.
Be More, Do Greater Sacramento.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't have to put a pause in there, by the way.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to
you can.
I'm slow to the uptake on some of these things. Be More, Do Greater Sacramento.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Be More, Do Greater Sacramento.
Exactly. Okay, you could do whatever
it's
you
like
want.
You're stating it.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like you're giving yourself a command.
It's a Rorschach test. Yeah. And the whole idea is that this, I mean, and you've really done a lot of this work around also the backyard advantage, right? And it flights very well with that notion, which is that you can, this is a different kind of place. This is a place where you as a person can be more than a cog in a wheel, like a hamster on a wheel,
more, do more.
Yeah, exactly. But we deliberately stayed away from, because it's not about doing more, it's about being more, right? Mm-hmm. You can change the world here. I mean, just look at UC Davis.
You bet.
You can be an amazing startup founder. You can be part of a community. You can be all these things while leading a life that doesn't feel like, you know, it's always receding out of view what you actually want to get to.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's something that also really hits the sort of the tone of the moment really, really well, because I know there are a lot of folks in the United States and around the world that kind of feel that way right now. Right. And so we really try to advance that. And what was cool about it, when we did all of our brand research, we put a survey out. We got 3,600 responses. 96% of people who live in this market who responded to that survey, so that's, I mean, statistically significant and all that, 96% would recommend this place as a place to live to a friend or a family member, right? 71% of business executives and business owners that we interviewed would recommend this place as a place to do business to a fellow CEO or a fellow business owner. So we're communicating from a position of strength. We're really tapping into something that I think is deeply felt in the market. So
it's interesting that you say that with the backyard advantage and comparing. I think they're very complementary for sure. But how we arrived at the backyard advantage. We talked about this with when I was talking about the Keiretsu, as we talked about this business partners that all love each other and find synergy. And what if we did that? How might that help us individually? But how might that, what could this group of successful people do to help our region and help, you know, help our hometown? And it started at a backyard party at my house. And that's when the idea really started to resonate with a lot of people. And now that it's worked, it's out of my backyard. It's in part of the collective backyards of you and all of Sacramento. And I think once other people began to see themselves in the vision, that was really the turning point for us, is I see me in that. That's why I asked you to sort of paint the picture, yeah. Because I want to be able to see me. I want to be able to see my kids as part of the, you know, Be More.
Yeah.
Be More Greater Sacramento? Be More, Do More Greater Sacramento.
Be More, Do Greater Sacramento.
Oh, Be More, Do Greater Sacramento. Okay.
That's it.
Okay, good. Sorry I'm fumbling it a little bit.
No, it's all good.
But I understand the message, even though I'm stumbling on the words. But that to me is the fun part, is where people start saying, yeah, that's mine. I'm part owner of that vision. I can see myself in that vision. Yep. I want to be, for us, I want to be in the backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. And we want people to own it. That's the other thing. This is not a GSAC brand. We've been doing this with the steering committee of the 25 organizations that have been involved in developing this. We have had, we've had focus groups, all that kind of stuff. This is really the intent is for this to be a shared brand. So we will sort of be the stewards of it. We're developing a lot of like collateral. We're putting a whole mm-hmm. brand toolkit together. One of the things we want folks to do is to really take all that and incorporate it into their own branding. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily, there's no logo associated with this or anything like that. It's really an idea of like, we're setting up a whole toolkit that you can take as a business leader or as a person in the region here, and just kind of communicate what makes this place special to you. And we feel like we've tapped into that, like that vein very well, to really understand what is it that at the core people feel about this place. Because I came here 4 years ago, and there is something truly special about Greater Sacramento that nowhere else had ever made me feel that way, and the same thing for my family. And I've talked to so many people who feel the same way. When I took the job at GSEC, there was a guy who hadn't talked to in like 5 or 6 years. He reached out to me on LinkedIn. He was like, oh man, you're moving to Sacramento. Oh man, I loved it so much there. I lived in Curtis Park. It was the most amazing time in my life. Then we moved to Atlanta. I love Atlanta too, but there's nothing like Sacramento. I had so many people just randomly reach out to me who had used to live here, who just love this place so much. Mm-hmm. And there was, and I think that's really what we want to communicate, because at the end of the day, I mean, you talk about the love as a really important part of business. There is something like that here, right? Mm-hmm. That I think we can really tap into and make special.
I'm sure you've heard that people compare us to like a Midwestern type of town. It's like, man, you have that Midwestern personality, but yeah, you're on the West Coast. It's yeah. kind of a unique position to be in, is to be in California, but have a culture that's more like a Midwestern town.
Yeah, and I think that's very true. And I think that also is the thing that we often fall into, and what we were hoping to maybe build on and go beyond, is this region has often defined itself against other places. You know what I mean? You can get here from Tahoe, you can get to Tahoe, you can get yeah. to the Bay Area, you can get to Redding, you can get to all these other places from here, which, you know, is great, and yes, you can. But what does that say about this place?
Right? Yeah, why would you want to leave? Yeah.
You're a Midwestern town, but in California. And by the way, that's very true. There's no question that that is accurate. But what is this place, right? Yeah. And I think that's what has been really, really cool about the process we just went through. And you know, Jasmine, our VP of marketing, has done an incredible job with it. So I want to just make sure that I give her a ton of credit for that, because yeah. this is definitely her baby. But
okay, so you're a brilliant guy. You know, I'm talking to you from one side. We're talking love and, you know, cultural issues and things like that, economic development. And on the other side, you know about chips and semiconductors, the three different kinds that there are. And, you know, so you're obviously a super smart guy. So, you know, before the show, you and I were talking about, you know, you're married, you got a couple of kids, 8 and 10 year old, and that, you know, being the spouse or the family of somebody that's in economic development. Are you having, you're out at the Kings game last night. I mean, is it working like 80, 90 hours a week? How do you bone up on knowing all this stuff? I'm asking you, I've lived here my whole life. I don't know a lot of the stuff you're talking about.
I mean, sure. You work for Barry Broom. You work hard, okay? And that, by the way, is good. I'm a huge. He's a mentor. He's a visionary. He's an incredible leader. But I mean, sure. There's that. I think. And speaking of Barry, the way I would express it. So let's talk about the boning up on things. You have to be a student of your work in economic development. And that's something Barry, that's one of his expressions. And that's something that I also personally really believe in. One of the great things about economic development and one of the biggest challenges of economic development is that you are sort of required to know a little bit about everything, right? Because mm-hmm. wherever the economy moves, you have to be able to move there with it and very, very quickly. You have to see opportunity sometimes, and oftentimes you need to see it before others see it, right? So you can kind of get there before the competition, right? And so being a bit of a know-it-all certainly helps, which I guess I am. But the I like to read, so yeah. I'm always and then we have a phenomenal research and strategy team who like to just drop stuff in Slack all the time. And I just this morning, Matt, our chief strategy officer, figured out a way to describe quantum computing quickly to the rest of us, and that was very helpful because now I know what quantum computing is. At least this much of it. No, don't get me wrong. You being a mile wide and an inch deep is the way to go here. But not get too deep in anything. That's an occupational hazard.
Awesome. But your family likes living here. You're there, even though you're working like crazy and having to do all kinds of things day and night.
I'm fortunate enough that I am able to spend a good bit of time with my family. I have a wonderful wife, Christy, who is very supportive. As I mentioned we were talking before the show, I jokingly refer to her as long suffering. But my two boys, 8 and 10. So I do get to go to a lot of baseball games, and I mean, I do also try to live the be more thing, as much as I can. Don't be just one, working all the time. It's important to enjoy the family moments, especially with the kids of the ages that they are now. It's an amazing, amazing experience. So,
okay, two more questions.
Yep.
Okay, so Barry Broom, you've referenced him a few times. He is he's a bigger than life figure in Sacramento. He's been on the show a number of times. He described to me one time, I asked him about his leadership style, and he said, all out, all in, face down in the blood, right? And he was like, he's serious about this. He can be an intense person. He wants to win. He's brilliant. He's driven. We were having dinner the other night at the president of Five Star Bank's house, and James Beckwith, and he was sitting next to me at dinner, and we're just having one of those family discussions, and he's got such a huge heart. I mean, he's just a very down to earth person, even though he has to project. He projects kind of a larger than life sort of presence. He can come down and play small, if you will, in a really compelling way. So here's my question. What's it like working with Barry Broom? Because I can imagine it can be surprising at times.
I mean, you just described it very well, so I think I'll just leave it there. No, by the way, yes, and by the way, we also appreciate Five Star Bank and James Beckwith very much. He's one of our board members, and Five Star is a great supporter of ours. But, I mean, I think working with Barry Broom is one of the, it's in many ways a privilege, because it is one of the best preparations anyone can have for excellence in economic development, because yes, it is unpredictable, of course, and I think Barry has a million ideas, and they all have to be tested internally or externally, and so you're always running, full tilt into those things. And I think it sharpens you intellectually, and it sharpens you also emotionally, because as you said, and I think this is something really important about folks who work in economic development Barry grew up in the Midwest in the Rust Belt, if you will, and saw what happens when the economic rug gets pulled out from under a community. And I think that's also where his intensity comes from, right? Yeah. I mean, and I grew up in a working class town in Denmark, and the only
only game in town was the slaughterhouse, the largest pig slaughterhouse in Northern Europe, which, by the way, 2 months ago, they just closed it. And so my hometown of Ringsted, Denmark, is going through some really, really tough times right now. And so I think understanding that, what I've said many times to Barry is that I don't know anyone who cares more about economic development than he does. And I try to model that myself as well, because I've seen some of the same stuff that he's seen. And I, in the sense that, you know, I grew up, you know, middle class, but I have a lot of folks in my sort of early childhood social network who really suffered when, you know, the economy went the wrong way and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, we that's the thing about a lot of economic developers. We kind of know that and we've seen that. And you don't want to go there. And that's why also the answer I told you earlier was like, the short run is often there's things that can derail you, but the alignment really needs to stay there, because that's when you start seeing, you know, spirals in a community. And we've all seen too many of those in my profession. So,
Okay. Last question. This is kind of an opportunity for you to wrap it up anyway. You're obviously an eloquent speaker, but what did I not ask you that I should have asked you? What other message out there is sort of, you know, it needs to be said? We need to get it out there, but I didn't bring it out because I drove the conversation.
I don't know if I have anything like that. I think you did we got pretty far and wide on this one. I mean, I want to just really appreciate this community. One of the cool things about being in Sacramento is that there is this willingness to just engage, and, you know, when we come up with a new crazy idea at GSEC, and, you know, sometimes they're crazy, sometimes they're not so crazy, sometimes they're crazy like a fox, you know, I feel like we always get a fair hearing. Folks are always, you know, and there is this genuine positive ambition and desire to lift to the next level in this community that I really, really appreciate. You know, there's a lot of collaboration, and I think that's a really big strength of the Greater Sacramento market. I think the thing that will test us over the next 10, 15 years or so is how ambitious are we willing to be along with that, right? It's cool to, you know, let's hear each other's ideas out and let's kind of build along the same track. But we're going to have to really be tested by the global economy in a way that we, and I think in a good way. I don't think we're, yeah. I'm not preaching doom and gloom here. I think more just to say, like, if we want to go to the next level, as you know, steel sharpens steel, the competition we're going to be going up against over the next 10 to 15 years is going to be really sharp. And so we're going to have to stay sharp.
Is it more courage or just stick-to-itiveness?
I think it's
courage to invest, risk more, I guess, or is it, hey, we just stick with it? You know, sometimes that can be really difficult to do.
Well, I think you start with courage and then you end with stick-to-itiveness. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean it's a cop out because it's two things in equal measure. You have to have the courage, and then you have to have the courage of your convictions, and then you have to have the ability to out execute everybody else, right? I mean, you know, this is as a startup and an entrepreneur and a startup founder, is once you have the concept, once you have product market fit, it becomes a game of execution. Mm-hmm. If you can't out execute anybody else, then you're not going to, that product market fit is going to go to somebody else, right? So I think we have product market fit in a number of places right now. So for some of those, it becomes a game of execution. In others, we're still searching a little bit for some of that product market fit. Once we find it, we have to be willing to run really, really fast and run through that hole when the offensive line gives us, defensive line rather, gives us that. So
that's right. I love it. Well, thank you, Trolls, for coming on the show. Thanks for what you do for Sacramento. And of course, thanks to your family for supporting the man that's driving this thing.
They are very supportive, but I also, I want to give, you know, my wife Christy is an amazing human being in her own right, by the way. She's doing a lot of wonderful work in the homeless services space, and Lars and Julian are great, wonderful kids. So big shout out to them as well.
Thank you.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, in our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side. Yeah.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.